Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry, my in-studio guests tonight. And it's always a pleasure to talk to both of them. Nick Capasso, Museum Director of the Fitchburg Art Museum. Nick, welcome once again.
Thank you, Mark.
And artist Carrie Crane, an exhibition of her work titled Beyond Measure will be on view at the Fitchburg Art Museum June 21st to September 1st. Carrie, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, too.
Always fun to be here.
Nick, I want to start with you. This is actually part of the tradition of the regional exhibitions. Can you talk about how that works at Fitchburg?
So the Fitchburg Art Museum, for the past 83 years, every summer has organized our regional exhibition of art and craft.
Was it always the same radius?
I don't know.
Okay.
So here, the premise is that any artist who lives or works within a rough 30-mile radius of the city of Fitchburg is invited to submit one or two artworks to this juried exhibition, and artists bring their artworks to the museum. This is juried from art, not from slides or digitally. I insist on that, and my staff hates me for it. But
let me stop you there, because that's actually not traditional. You know, a lot of people submit slides, but you can't really tell anything about an object from a slide, can you?
You can, if you're experienced, you can tell some things.
But not everything.
Not everything.
So this means that artists, a lot of artists, are schlepping stuff into the museum.
Yeah, bringing things. And it's a big organizational feat for our staff.
I pity your staff. That's tough work, man.
Yeah,
but you have a dedicated staff.
I do, and we feel that this needs to be done right.
Yeah, yeah.
And judgment should be made from actual artworks, not extrapolating or assuming from representations of artworks, because they're not the same.
I'm going to stop you as we go along. This may sound like a flip question, but it's not. So a person walks in with some work that's obviously not going to make it. Do you tell them right away, or do you wait?
No. Because what we do, the artists all bring their work, and we have an intake process.
And then they leave it, and they go home.
And then our staff takes the artwork up into our galleries, unwraps it all, lays it all out so the juror can see everything. And we invite a different juror every year to come and make the selections. And this year we had roughly, I don't know, around 400 submissions, our individual artworks. And the juror has to narrow it down to something between 75 to 110, which is kind of roughly what fits in the gallery.
Now, you're not even trying to figure out at this point whether what hangs with what.
Oh, no.
Because that's one of the real challenges of a show like this.
The whole thing is crazy. So the juror comes.
But the artists appreciate it.
Yeah, I know. I can see that. They really care about the work.
The juror comes and makes his or her selection. Yeah. And then the juror goes home. And the juror selects most of the prize winners. We give out prizes.
Right.
I'll get to the prizes in a minute.
Okay.
So it makes all the selections, and then our staff takes all the work that did not get selected for the show and removes it from the galleries, and the artists come back and pick up that stuff and take it home. And then we're left with all the works to be included sitting in the galleries. And then our curatorial fellow is charged with it's a capstone project, right? So we have a curatorial fellow.
This is literally trial by fire.
Yeah, it's curatorial boot camp.
It really is.
So we have a curatorial fellows program, and what that means in a nutshell is every year we hire an emerging curator to come and work with us for 1 year.
And you've had some great curatorial fellows.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And we give them all this experience, and we pump up their resumes, and their capstone project is the regional show. So not only are they responsible for all the organization and the process and the cat herding and the hiring the juror and all that business, then they're responsible for making visual sense of what the juror picked. The juror does not lay out.
For people who don't understand how this works and have never been behind the scenes in an art museum, to have a mixed show like this that has every kind of material, and in every shape and color and size.
And style.
And style. To make visual sense so that it sort of swings from gallery to gallery, that's the art of the curator. That it really is the artistic. That's the most difficult thing that you can do, I think, as a curator.
Anybody could do a
Dutch show of 1600s landscapes. They all look the same.
Look good together.
They're all basically, there's a dog crapping in the corner of one, but that's about it. You know, it's like, this thing is really difficult.
Yeah, it's a real test of your visual acuity.
It is. Is there anybody that goes over their choices at the end and says,
Oh, yeah, we're mentoring this person as she's doing it, but we try to let the fellow do it all by herself, and we give her some guidelines at the beginning and
some Xanax. I would imagine at
coffee.
The end,
we'll give them coffee.
I imagine at the end of this, they must be visually exhausted.
Well, there's a point, and this happens every time. There's a point where you're like 3 days into the layout where everyone wants to die. And then miraculously, the next morning, it comes together. It's
so far.
Yes, so far. Well, I trust the process.
I am always impressed by the regional exhibition because the works themselves are fascinating,
mm-hmm.
but the way that it swings within a gallery, I am very impressed by the way that's put together.
We work hard on it because what makes it a museum quality show is not just that the art is good, but it's got to be arranged good as well.
That's exactly right.
Like really good. And so we pay a lot of attention to that. So let me tell you about the prizes.
Yeah.
The juror, for the most part, picks most of the prizes, and they're mostly medium based. Like there's a watercolor prize and a sculpture prize and a painting prize.
Cool.
And a sculpture prize. And then there's a first, second, and third prize. And all,
so like best of show kind
of thing. Right. So all of these prizes come with, you know, a little bit of money, you know, a few hundred bucks. Small check.
That's a good amount of money.
It's not a giant artist prize.
It's a good amount of money.
But the real prize is the best in show or the first prize. And accompanying the little check is the opportunity to have your very own solo exhibition at the museum the following summer. And that's why Carrie is joining me today, because she was the grand prize winner in the 83rd regional exhibition.
I love the way that works too. So there are essentially two exhibitions going on every time this is on.
That's right.
There's last year's winner.
Right next to each other. Yep.
Now, Carrie, we got to talk to you about, first of all, I've been familiar with your work for decades. And I want to talk about the evolution of your work, and we'll talk about the work that's in this show, but you started out doing really interesting landscapes that looked like nothing I'd ever seen before. Talk to me about that. Was that your first interest, was doing these sort of rural landscapes, I think you called them?
I called them rural landscapes. And I had done a few different things leading up to that, but that was probably the first really solid body of work that I worked on for, you know, 5 or 6 years or something.
And they're still beautiful. I wasn't, you know, once, even though you have evolved in different directions, that doesn't denigrate the early work. I still love that work.
Well, and often I'll send someone to my website who's not particularly familiar with my current work, and the comment I'll get back will be, oh, I love your landscape.
But the rest of your stuff is too weird. What I love about your work is the evolution from that point on. And I get to watch for me, it's really interesting to know an artist long enough to watch your evolution. You started doing things called like layered landscapes. Talk mm-hmm. to me about what those were like.
Well, what happened with the painted landscapes was I ended up getting bored. And I just couldn't get myself to paint another one, even though I had people interested in them. And I really wanted to use more contemporary materials and think about things in a more contemporary
fashion. Was there anything
fashion.
That you had seen that was instigating this, or was it just something that came from you internally?
I think there were a lot of things that I had seen. Okay. I would go to New York and go to the galleries in Chelsea, and I would see people using materials that I was really drawn to. And I ended up continuing landscapes, essentially, but I was painting them on multiple layers of transparent material.
Them.
And they moved from being having a horizon line to being more aerial. And I was, you know, this was sort of the new era of Google Maps. And I was using, you know, Photoshop and Illustrator and all these tools.
Did that really click?
Yeah, it all really clicked. And that was what was driving me initially, was just wanting to use all these things that weren't a paintbrush and paint.
From that point on, it seems like science and technology started increasing their influence on your work. You did a series of things. It was an odd group, sphere packing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I interviewed you about sphere packing. And that was like one of the most interesting ideas that I thought it was fascinating, but you have to explain it.
Well, I did a 9-month residency in the material physics lab at Clark University.
That's right. I remember that.
And I was following the research for all the postgrads and PhD students. And one of the students was doing her work on sphere packing, and specifically what happens. There's a perfect pattern to fit spheres most efficiently in a container. And she was measuring the decay of that system if you randomly dropped a sphere into a container. And she'd do these photographs of the various layers of the box.
So you want that job, right?
That's
the job. I want to do that for the rest of my life.
Drop
spheres into pack spheres and watch them randomize.
Right.
Cool.
Well, it was these images that she had of the decay that started the whole sphere packing thing. And then I just kind of went on a riff with that.
From there, what did your work progress? You did ambiguous objects and diagrams and maps.
Well, I went to get my MFA.
Yeah.
And as I entered my MFA program, I was really interested in some area that floated between art and science. And I wasn't quite sure where I wanted to land, but I knew I was influenced by science. I didn't want to illustrate science, but I wanted to communicate something about it. And
I want to stick with that. What do you want to communicate from science? I want to delve into that a little bit more.
Well, there are a couple things. Sometimes my message has to do, it's sort of a cautionary tale that you can, using these graphic tools that we're all used to, maps and diagrams and things like that, you can manipulate information to be expressed in whatever way you may want it to be. So I was taking that process, taking the information away and leaving it to be completely ambiguous as much as possible. And by doing so, I was trying to emphasize this connection between data or no data and implied kind of authority and information, and how easily can I manipulate that? What can I make the viewer think without giving them a whole lot of information? So that's where the maps and diagrams came in.
So you're becoming a dangerous person.
I think I'm fairly innocent, and there's a fair amount of humor.
Dangerous
in
people say
but
that.
I do want to say that the fake news term had not been, or false science had not been coined when I started this.
Okay.
So I wasn't jumping into quite the boiling pot.
You're not so much concerned about science per se, but the way that the results are being presented to the public in ways that you can emphasize data in one way or the other.
Well, it's shifted a little bit since then, because now I'm more interested in, I took those images that I was making, and they often were in, they always meant something to me, whether I communicated that to the viewer or not. I knew what
they're beautiful images.
And most of what they tended to illustrate were ideas about things that we can't measure.
Right.
So I started to think about what instrument would
measure the unmeasurable.
Would measure these things. And that's what led me to making the instruments that are now sort of directing my work.
Okay, and this brings us to beyond measure.
Mm-hmm.
So actually you've designed, and I've seen these, you've designed these things which measure really ambiguous, the labels to them, first of all, are part of the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
You've actually created an entire sort of fantasy science. First of all, the stuff always looks a couple of decades out of date.
Yes.
Some of them look like late stuff I've seen from the late 1800s. And it also reminds me of stuff that people were doing, like research in spiritism or something like that. And they would like develop some kind of, you know, ectoplasm detector or something like that. But when you read the labels, and I bet unless people like Google your stuff, I bet people would actually consider them real.
That's my hope. To a point. I want that experience where someone kind of looks at it and
is
skeptical, but then gets kind of roped in with, because they come with explanations, and then they go through the thought process of, is this for real? Is this really doing this? And then they walk out of the gallery fairly confident that it's not real, but geez, it could be. That's where I want to be.
I love that, because that's really a very weird space that's very hard to define that you want out of the audience. And that's what's, I think, most successful about your work. I enjoy it because as a person who really loves science, I recognized immediately what you're doing. But the things themselves, you want them to exist because they're sort of neat looking and they do really cool things. Give me an example of one of the works.
Well, for this show.
Yeah. Did you design new ones for this show?
I did. One in particular, I asked Nick if I would be able to have access to the archives in order to find some bizarre object. And I found some lace, just weird scraps of lace. All of them had some, you know, either stains or tears or something. And I designed an instrument that's actually not old-fashioned looking that analyzes the lace and detects the story behind whatever damage there was to the lace. So there's an image with a story that results from this instrument.
It's like lace CSI.
Yeah.
So this like instrument is actually giving you, wow.
And it's studying, the instrument will be in the process of analyzing a piece of lace as you view it in the gallery.
What kind of stories are coming out about the lace? Like the tragic histories of the people who were in contact with
them? In one case, yes.
Wow.
And sometimes they're not tragic.
I just flashed on this, and I don't know if you remember the old Tom Swift books. Yeah, they're probably before your time, and I know they're before your time. Tom Swift used to be this inventor, and every issue of the book, and I collect them, he would have some incredible instrument that would do something weird, like the Electromarine Spectator. And it would have these incredible names, and it would do something really specifically weird. He had one that electronic retroscope, which would look at like ruins and fill in the missing pieces. it was like a screen. Mm-hmm. This reminds me of these Tom Swift stuff. This is like, they're amazing. But then you wonder, is it possible to make an instrument like this?
Well, I don't know. One of the instruments, there's one instrument that it's called the georecorder, and it has this digital element to it where a customer could send in information about the time they spent on the coast with their grandmother learning to make sandcastles, or eating the time they dropped their sandwich in the sand and had to eat it anyway. And it maps these memories.
Oh, whoa.
Relative to positions on the coast that will be submerged by sea level rise.
That you could do. Wow. The other thing I'm noticing while I'm hearing you talk about them is that they all go back to the immediacy of a human life, which is missing from a lot of instrumentation, which tends to take the human element out of it, and then puts the humanity back into it.
Right. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, and this is about our lives, not about the abstract life, the most scientific instrument measure, which mm-hmm. is really, really interesting. Because we don't have those instruments. I guess, you know, things like x-rays and radioscopes and EEGs do one aspect of that. But this is the personal, social, emotional life of a person that's being recorded by these instruments. Mm-hmm. I was hoping you were going to invent something that would like measure the many worlds theory of physics.
Give me some time.
Because I'll tell you, they're really looking for that because they have absolutely no way to prove whether that theory is real or not. And I think that would be so cool if you came up with something. Now, how many pieces are in the show?
Well, there are five instruments.
Wow.
And their associated graphic analysis.
Data readouts.
Which there are multiple for each instrument. And then there's a large installation piece that's very colorful and full of rings and is called Orbital Networks. And that...
It's wow. brand new.
Yeah, that's brand
new. Designed specifically
Carrie for... Carrie made it just for yes. us.
And it is awaiting the development of its instrument, which is... very complicated, and I haven't pulled it off yet.
Is it still in the process of being created?
It's in the future.
In the future, it'll be created.
It will be created in the future.
So hopefully. It's creating itself in the future?
No, but that's an idea.
Right.
It's called the circle generator, but it doesn't exist yet. Because I haven't quite figured out how to
I don't
do
even
it.
Have to see it. I already love it. As a matter of fact, I shouldn't see it, and then I'd really love it.
No, you'll love it more when you see it.
Nah, I've already seen it in my head. I will see it. Nick, that's one of the things that I've noticed about the tradition of the artists is that they do site-specific work every time. There's some aspect of the show.
Our artists often use this as an opportunity to make new work.
Now, what events are going to be centering around this?
Well, Carrie will be giving an artist talk on Sunday, July 21st at 1:30.
Okay.
And then she will also be present in gallery on Saturday, August 24th from 2 to 4. And I know what the artist talk is. Carrie, what are you going to do in gallery?
I'm going to hope that some people show up and want to talk to me.
So you're just going to field random questions and stuff like that? That's always chancy.
Well, I think it's really nice to be able to have an opportunity that's not the opening.
Which is more formal.
Right.
And it's chaotic, and it's really hard
to have a conversation.
We're announcing prizes. Yeah. It's kind of a madhouse.
Oh, that's all going on at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's fun, but it's not an intimate conversation with an artist.
And the best part of that is that I get to give out the award to the next winner. I'm so excited.
We literally pass the baton every year.
Oh, that's really nice.
It's great.
You can't get cynical about this.
No, you can't.
Except the award is in the future. The award, we're creating the award in the future, so you can hand them an empty box. The award will suddenly assemble itself 20 years from now.
The award is real.
Whatever. I love where this is going. Where do you get the materials for this?
It's kind of dumpster diving. Recycling.
I can't picture you in a dumpster.
Well, it's clean dumpster diving.
Okay.
But a lot of the materials, I shouldn't even say this.
My husband
gets from a very special loading dock in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, my God.
He brings home some pretty precious items from this dumpster, among other places like the recycling center and West Boylston.
So it must be great to sort of tag along with you as you go shopping for these future instruments.
Yeah. Well, I don't, you know, it's just pulling things off shelves going, maybe this could be useful. And then I take them completely apart.
Okay.
And it's some tiny little piece within this, you know, old radio or a right. pair of headphones or whatever. And there's something in there that's perfect for something. And then
this.
The rest of the headphones are useless to me.
And you never go back to them.
Never go back.
So it's always got to be a continual sort of...
I have a lot of bins of stuff that will never get used. And I'll have to send it all back to the recycling center someday.
That's hilarious. You won't try to go back and try to find something else to do?
Oh, well, I will.
Okay.
But I know that there's a lot of extraneous material in my bins that will never be...
Do you know what the things that you are sort of deconstructing, do you know what they do?
Usually, yes.
You do?
But that really is irrelevant.
Not to me. I think that's interesting that you know that.
Yeah, they're almost all of them. Well, except for the stuff that comes from Cambridge, I can't always tell you what that does.
You can't or you won't?
I think I can't.
Okay.
But mostly they're already deconstructed.
Okay, so they've already been pulled out of other things
and
have been thrown away. Fantastic. Nick, what's coming up in the fall at FAM?
The big show in the fall at FAM is a large exhibition of work by Daniela Rivera. And Daniela is one of the most important Latino artists working in New England. She teaches at Wellesley.
Oh, wow.
She had a big installation at the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston a couple of years ago. She's doing a temporary public art project in the city of Boston this summer, and we're showing paintings and installations. It'll be her first big one-person
exhibition. I really wanted to talk to her.
Oh, you will. Don't worry.
Okay. Carrie, you have a website? You have a great website that people should look at. And it has all the things we've talked about are on the website. What is it?
Yes, it's carriecrane.com. And then there's a secondary website that's called becomingtruth.art.
Dot art.
It's a thing.
Cool.
You should give out the Fitchburg Art Museum.
We should be dot art.
No, you should be. The Fitchburg Art Museum's website is
FitchburgArtMuseum.org.
And they've got a functional, it's always good to go to a place where the websites actually work, and both of them do. My special in-studio guest tonight are Nick Capasso, Museum Director of the Fitchburg Art Museum, one of the most exciting museums, I think, that's around, and artist Carrie Crane, an exhibition of your work. You have to see her stuff to really get what we were talking about. They're really precious. They're really fun. Beyond Measure will be on view at the Fitchburg Art Museum June 21st to September 1st. And while you're there, the 84th Regional Exhibition of Art and Craft is going to be up there too. So there's no reason not to go, unless you create an instrument to create those kinds of excuses.
Please don't.
Really? We don't need that one.
Thank you both. You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.